is brought to you by Head Start Basketball.
Hey, Hoopheads, wanted to take a minute to shout out our partners and friends at Dr. Dish Basketball. We've had their partnership manager and training specialist, Jefferson Mason, and marketing manager, Nick Bartlett, on the show in the past, and we couldn't be more excited about what they're doing for the game of basketball. Their Dr. Dish shooting machines are undoubtedly the most advanced and user-friendly machines on the market, and truly accelerate skill development faster than ever. Beyond efficient reps, Dr. Dish provides training expertise and versatility designed to develop complete players. The new Dr. Dish CT machine has further revolutionized basketball training with over 150 plus on-demand individual and team workouts from some of the best coaches and trainers in the game. These workouts include video instruction and combine game-like shooting drills with ball handling, conditioning, and agility drills. Along with workouts, the Dr. Dish training management system also provides stat tracking and analytics to track progress and ensure accountability. These are just a few reasons why top programs like Duke, North Carolina, Louisville, Florida, Baylor, and countless others are upgrading to Dr. Dish. Learn more at drdishbasketball.com. Follow their incredible content at Dr. Dish B-Ball on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. And make sure you mention the Hoopheads podcast to get $300 off your next Dr. Dish purchase. That's a great deal, Hoopheads. Get out and get your Dr. Dish shooting machine today.
I want to do whatever I can to make myself be the best coach, teacher, of the game that I possibly can. We get satisfaction and joy. I want to help as many kids as I can by using basketball to get better.
Zach Weir is an assistant basketball coach at South Grand Prairie High School in Grand Prairie, Texas. Weir played college basketball at the D1, D2, and JUCO levels before beginning his coaching career. Currently finishing his 12th year of coaching, Zach has been a high school varsity assistant for the past 9 years and helped coach multiple playoff teams, multiple 20-win season teams, all-state players, all-district players, and players that have gone on to play at all levels of college basketball. Weir is in charge of the offense, coordinates the guard skill development, and heads up the strength and conditioning program for South Grand Prairie High School. Weir is a USA Basketball Gold Certified coach and a contributing writer for different websites such as Fast Model, Men's Basketball Hoop Scoop, Winning Hoops, and Stack. Zach works camps all across the country helping players improve, including Snow Valley Basketball Camp. Zach has a never-ending passion for coaching kids, for basketball, and for player development that involves developing a complete player on and off the court. Check out our website, hoopheadspod.com, where you can listen to every episode in our archive. After you've listened to this episode or one of your other favorites, please head over to your favorite podcast app and leave us a 5-star rating and review. Those reviews help others in the basketball community find our show. Make sure you're subscribed to the Hoopheads podcast so you never miss an episode. The pod is available on iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, SoundCloud, Google Play, and YouTube. Have a notebook at your side as you listen to this episode with Zach Weir, assistant boys basketball coach at South Grand Prairie High School in the state of Texas. Hello and welcome to the Hoopheads podcast. It's Mike Klinzing here with my co-host Jason Sunkel. And tonight we are pleased to welcome from South Grand Prairie High School in Grand Prairie, Texas, Zach Weir. Zach, welcome to the podcast.
Hey, thank you so much for having me. I really, really appreciate the chance to be on.
Yeah, we're excited to have you on and be able to dig into all the great things that you have going on and that you've been able to do in the game back in your playing career and also as coach. So let's start out by going back in time to when you were a kid. Talk to me a little bit about how you got into the game of basketball, what made you fall in love with it, and just how it became your life's passion.
Well, it's crazy. I don't know if it's like anybody else's or it may be, everybody has stories of playing out in the dirt, which I have done, dribbling the ball in the dirt, cutting out the laundry basket. My parents are from Estherville, Iowa, which is, I've been there a handful of times. We moved to Texas when I was 1 year old. And so what I know is the Midwest style of basketball, moving, passing, cutting, which is, night and day different from the way that it is, in the DFW area down here in Dallas where I'm from. you know, everything's about, you know, creating off the bounce and, you know, long, just athletic players. And really what got it going was my dad would always talk about, you know, Larry Bird. I actually never saw the guy play, but my dad, would always mention a guy named Rick Mount, went to Purdue. I've never watched him play, but he always showed me this shot that he did. And so, you know, that was one of the first memories I have out in the driveway when I was a little tiny kid. I mean, probably what, 6, 7 years old, probably as far back as I can remember, trying to master that shot. And the person that actually taught me probably more about shooting than, you know, I credit my dad, but my older sister. I have an older sister that was a really good basketball player in her own right. And we would have, you know, the most epic battles out on the driveway, just like anybody else. But it all started with shooting. You know, I tell kids all the time that I coach or train or anybody that'll listen, you know, one of the best sounds in the world is, you know, hearing that ball go through the net. And I can remember my dad worked at a car dealership when I was a kid, and we had an old, I guess it was plexiglass backboard, you know, not the square ones, but kind of octagonish or whatever it is.
A fan backboard.
And so the way that I learned to shoot off the glass, which my dad would always say, hey, whenever you can shoot off the glass, and you know, I would argue, no, I want to hear the swish, was he had this huge decal, and it was the place was called Redbird, Irby Chrysler or something, I think was the name of it at that time. But anyways, the logo was a huge red bird. And that's how he taught me how to shoot off the glass. And that's one of my, you know, my favorite memories of just playing out on the driveway. I can remember when it was Christmas time, my parents would turn the outdoor lights on and we would have the Christmas lights up. And I can't tell you how many Christmas bulls that I broke, the ball bouncing and the light would pop and, you know, we would hurry and try to act like we didn't do it. A funny memory that I always tell my kids is, you know, I think nowadays a lot of kids struggle. I love the gun. I love the Dr. Dishes and all that stuff. But I think something that the older generation was better at was reading the flight of the ball and rebounding and kind of judging your shot based on, you know, just playing by yourself, out on the driveway, you know. Well, we lived in the top of a cul-de-sac. So there was a certain side of it was the offensive left side. So if I was over there shooting and I missed, I learned really, really quick to judge if I did something to shoot it right or if I did something to shoot it long, because if I didn't hurry up and go follow my shot, which, you know, I did just because I knew I was going to miss, I would probably be chasing that ball for at least 3 to 4 blocks because it was, you know, I think it really, really helped my focus as a shooter, because now, I mean, when I get out and play with, you know, whoever or just for fun, you know, I'll know exactly what's going on in my shot. You know, I have played and practiced a million times, but, you know, just stuff like that. We moved out into a rural community in Waxahachie, Texas, where I actually graduated high school. And when we first moved out there, we had we didn't have concrete or anything. And I actually did. My mom had a pink laundry basket and she ended up looking for it. Well, I had cut the bottom out of it and our crossbeam on our barn was actually 10 feet. My dad and I measured it, you know, I can go out there and shoot, you know, cause we didn't really have access to a gym or park or anything like that, you know. And nowadays it's, man, there's facilities. I mean, I live 10 minutes from, probably not even 10 minutes, 5 minutes from a field house type place that has, you know, 40 different courts or however much it is. So, you know, just fell in love with it then, watching the game with my dad. I remember when Christian Laettner hit the shot. I'm a huge Duke fan. You know, when he hit the shot against Kentucky, you know, I see that playing over and over in my head. You know, the oop, the grand hill that he caught. I was a huge Bobby Hurley fan. The Mavericks when Jason Kidd, I remember my dad telling me about Jason Kidd. He said, hey, there's this guy from Cal and we need to go watch him, you know, in 94 or whatever it was when he got drafted. And I had never heard of him. You know, I love basketball and I would just kind of watch just for the, you know, like any kid does, just at its face value, not really diving into it too much, you know.
All right, I got to ask you about that era of the Dallas Mavericks. So the Jimmy Jackson, Jason Kidd, Jamal Mashburn threesome there for Dallas. Yes. I think if you'd have gone back to the early years of those three guys, the fact that they were all three on the same team, it seems like that's a lost era of Mavericks basketball. So what do you remember about that particular triumvirate? And obviously they all there was the rumors that they had had a fight over a female. I believe it was Anita Baker, if I'm not mistaken. That was the rumor that was who they were all fighting over. But those three guys, I think, would have made an interesting combination and never quite lived up to their potential, at least not in Dallas.
Yeah, just some different things. Like I said, when my dad, you know, my dad is, you know, kind of is a hero to me, you know, and I still talk to him about coaching now. And actually, the name of my business, the angle of approach basketball, actually was his idea. He's been in the car business for 30 some odd years, and it's a car term. I had never heard it. He was always talking about Jason Kidd and kind of some of the things that I remember is they were always so good, but they could never quite get over the hump. And then, you know, whatever girl it was, singer or whatever it was, you just remember seeing the talent of them or Jamal Mashburn, and they could never seem to just put it all together. You know, J. Kidd couldn't make free throws. My dad would always tell me, you know, they're free. You got to make them. I remember my dad, and that was actually one of the reasons why I actually took so much interest in rebounding, because he was like, man, just watch how he rebounds. Of course, you got to understand, my dad, you know, being from Iowa, the Big Ten country, you know, big Iowa Hawkeyes fans, he would always tell me how, you know, even to this day, he still talks about, oh, you know, the Big Ten is so much better because they play so much more physical and they rebound and they defend, which to a certain extent is true. But, you know, it's good banter. We go back and forth. But I just remember watching J. Kidd, you know, just some of the passes that he would make, how he would set up his teammates, how he was always talking to them. I remember he wore a little wristband on it or a sweatband on his left forearm, you know, so of course I had to do it. Well, just watching him rebound, and, you know, he was obviously a lot bigger than I am. I'm roughly about 6 foot, but just the tenacity that he ran a team and the intensity that he rebounded and defended. And I was like, man, if this guy could ever shoot, you know, lo and behold, he comes back as a spot shooter and a let me run the offense guy. And, you know, they end up, you know, winning a championship. But then it was on to Steve Nash. And, boy, I can't tell you how I went back and forth with. I had to have a 1A and 1B when they drafted Dirk, you know, and Steve Nash. I remember, you know, Don Nelson saying this guy was, you know, so good. I was like, man, who is this dude from Santa Clara? And so from then on, it was, you know, I was all about Steve Nash. I mean, just the way he handled the ball. My sister, you know, really liked him because he, you know, had the soccer with it. You know, she played soccer. I played soccer when I was a kid. And so, you know, I kind of just fell in love with the Mavericks, and just, you know, I remember watching them play the Nets when he first got to Dallas, and Kenyon Martin kept getting switched on him, and somehow this little tiny guy, which, you know, I didn't really realize how tall he actually was.
Right.
I was like, man, how does he keep pulling up these jumpers in his face? And so, you know, so then, of course, you go to the gym, and what do? Or you go to the driveway. We had a YMCA at the time. And you just work on it. You know, his little controlled hesitation fade that he did. And, you know, and I still give kids, you know, players fits with it, you know, myself. Not at the clip that he does. Don't get me wrong. But, you know, just we've had some good players. Michael Finley was another one that, you know, I really liked. Not too many. I don't think too many people were too big on Sean Bradley, just because, you know, he wasn't physical, you know, and
people like to see him get dunked on.
Yeah. So, hey, you know what? For a long time before Mark Cuban took over, the Mavs were you know, they were kind of always out. I remember watching highlights and why are we always on the other end, you know, getting dunked on or getting crossed over or whatever it may be, you know. So,
yeah. But yeah, Mark Cuban definitely brought a different culture to the Mavericks than the previous owner, Donald Carter, for sure. I think that he was able to, you know, transform. And he was probably, again, one of the first owners to sort of recognize the value in spending money on, for lack of a better word, the amenities around the team. And I think that he brought in a new philosophy that has been adopted, I think, pretty much across the board by NBA owners, where, you know, the locker rooms and the travel and the weight room and the practice facilities and all these things, you know, Cuban was definitely on the cutting edge of that for sure.
Oh, yeah. And I don't blame him. I mean, whatever you got to do to keep the old saying, look good, feel good, play good. And, you know, these guys, they work so hard at their craft. And, you know, I read an article the other day about the sleep deprivation. And, you know, that Hassan Whiteside was in the article commenting about how he couldn't, it was impossible to get the amount of sleep that you need. And, I mean, all those little things that he did has been really, really cool. And it's been a lot of fun, especially to go to games. You know, they got a new arena. I mean, I don't know how long ago it was, but, you know, tore down the old one, which it was pretty cool, reunion arena, whatever. But it's just such a cool atmosphere to go watch it, you know, and then with this success. Now, I can't lie, I was a little upset after they won a championship in 2011. And they let all them guys go.
Yeah, that's tough. I mean, that's tough to be a fan of that team and then just watch them come together for 1 year and then have it all disappear the next year. That's as a fan, I can't imagine that Dallas was too happy.
No, it was pretty tough, you know, especially like the Tyson Chandler. I thought he was a huge, huge piece that it kind of like, you know, they talked about how much he meant to the team, but it wasn't as appreciated as I thought from a coaching standpoint, looking on the outside, looking in, how much he really did. You know, he was the anchor of the defense. He caught lob when he needed to. You know, he was always talking, which, you know, that's one of the things that's like an epidemic nowadays with young players and players in general, is just communication on the floor and, you know, talking to your teammates, talking through stuff. You know, and just breaking up that whole thing. But they did win one, so it is pretty cool to argue with the kids. You know, the kids at school, they love the super teams, and, you know, when they team up, you got LeBron Davis. You know, it's pretty cool because, you know, I don't think that Dirk gets enough credit outside of Dallas for being just the stud that he was for 19 to 20 years. I mean, because when that guy was in his prime, I mean, he was unbelievable, you know. And all the kids, it's always fun to, you know, let them know, like, you know, Dallas was probably the last team that just had one stud, you know. The rest of the guys that was downhill slide, you know, Jet Terry was an unbelievable shooter, but, you know, he was nothing like he was when he was early on. J. Kidd was that way, you know. You kind of go up and down the list. They should have won in 06, but that's okay.
Yeah, for sure. Well, that series, you look back on that, and obviously Wade was incredible, but you look at the number of times the number of free throws that he shot in that finals. That's the one thing that I always remember from that finals, is just coming away from the fact that, man, is Wade getting to the line a lot, and whether or not it was legitimate or, I'm sure in the eyes of some Dallas fans, illegitimate, the number of times that he got to the foul line. Yeah, I think you could probably make a pretty coherent argument that Dallas, you know, should have had an opportunity to get that one. And then, of course, then they had the following year was the year where Dirk won the MVP, right? And then they lost in the first round. That was the year after. That was 07, right? I believe.
If I'm not wrong. 57 games or whatever. Yep. And that series with the Warriors was tough. You know, you had Don Nelson on the other side. He knows the Mavs like the back of his hand, you know, and drafted some of the guys, you know. But I always try to make sure that I don't put, you know, and I do the same thing. We do the same thing with parents when we're talking to them. you know, you don't, and we tell our kids, they don't, people don't know what we're doing inside of our circle as far as our team. And so, you know, outside looking in, it was, to me, was it weird or however you want to put it, that Avery Johnson switched up the lineup? It was. But Dirk didn't handle the double teams. You know, Baron Davis went off and did his thing. And, you know, again, from the outside looking in, it's easy to point fingers and say, you know, whatever. But I always try to tell our kids, man, you need to respect every NBA team, whether they're the first place team or the last place team or the first guy, you know, the best player in the starting lineup or the 15th guy that may be on IR. Because at the end of the day, those guys are professionals at their craft and they're very, very good. You know, just like the coaches, you know, the coaches are unbelievable in the NBA and, you know, they know what they're doing. It's not like they're out there trying to lose. I think sometimes, you know, since I've been coaching, I've actually from the time that I was in college to now being, you know, my 13th year of coaching or whatever. You know, you kind of think your thinking changed. And so I'll tell friends, you know, the same thing. Like, we don't know what they're doing. Like, they're trying their best. They're trying stuff. And sometimes it just doesn't work. But those guys on the other side, they're NBA players as well. Like, they're really, really good. They're trying to get paid. They're professionals at their craft. And so, you know, I try to keep a level head. But you're right. As a fan, sometimes it is, we do get engulfed in the game. And it is tough. It is a tough pill to swallow. That one was tough. You know, he gets the MVP and they're not in the playoffs or whatever, or they get knocked out. Right. So,
yeah.
And that was my guy. Dirk is my, you know, people shed a lot of tears. People shed a lot of tears last year when he retired. So,
well, it's tough to be with someone as part of your franchise for 20 years and then see that guy go away and retire. That's tough because he's been your identity of your team for, you know, the better part of two decades. And when that little run ends, it's hard to then, you know, reconnect. And, you know, here in Cleveland, we've experienced that to some degree with LeBron, where he left the first time and people were upset and angry, comes back. And just like you said, getting one championship for us here in Cleveland, I never thought we were ever going to get any. So I'll take my one and be very happy with it. But then LeBron leaves the second time and people weren't nearly as upset, but it's definitely strange to sort of recalibrate your fandom and go back and look and say, okay, this is the team is no longer about LeBron and contending for a championship. Now we're in this mode where we're rebuilding with young players, and you go back to figuring out, well, how can we get better so we can make the playoffs? How can we get better so we can, you know, win a round or two? Whereas every year with LeBron for the last 10 years, it's been, hey, what do we have to do to win a championship? And it's kind of a different feel when that franchise marquee guy isn't there anymore.
Well, it's got to be easier though now that Luka's there. I have to imagine that made the transition a little better, right?
Yeah, no, that's what I was going to say was, you know, he did ease that blow for me because, you know, he's a so actually at Snow Valley, I met a guy and one of the coaches there. Goes by the name of MD. Y'all didn't get to meet him. Y'all were with last year was y'all's first year, right?
Correct. To go. Yeah. Last year was the first year. This past summer,
he was actually at the jam camp in Italy because I messaged him to see if he was going back. And I would tell you his last name, but he's Lithuanian, and I have no idea how to say it. So, but he's an awesome guy, and so I had to ask him. I said, "Hey, man, what do you know about, you know, Luka Doncic?" And he said, man, he's like a 6'8 Steve Nash. And, you know, I had watched some of him, you know, on tape and, you know, some stuff that you can pull up. And I was like, man, I'm just curious, is his athleticism going to translate? And so when I came home from Snow Valley, and then I think it was P3 was the sports, you know, performance place that had put out the numbers about how athletic he was as far as stopping and starting and stuff like that. I told my buddy, like, man, we need to make sure that we get him. And sure enough, I mean, goodness gracious, I didn't think he was going to do what he did. Don't get me wrong, but I knew he was going to be good. I mean, anytime you're playing against men when you're like 13 or whatever it was that he started at, you know, he just has such a, he's just fun to watch. You know,
he has such a good feel for the game. And I always say that passing is a skill that I think you either you either have that passing gene in you or you don't. Like the guys who are really good passers, just A, they make the easy pass very, very well. So they get the ball and they already know where it's going before it gets to their hands. So that's number one. And then number two, I think not only do they make the easy pass, but they also just see things. They see openings. They see cuts. They see holes in the defense that other less gifted passers just don't see. And I think Luka definitely has that passing gene that he's able to see things that other guys just can't. And then I just think he's a very unselfish, keep the ball moving type of passer as well. And those are the guys that if you were playing a pickup game of basketball, those are the kind of guys that you want to have on your team because they're going to keep the ball moving. They're going to get you an opportunity to score versus the guy who dribbles 69 times and then only passes it when you know they've exhausted every opportunity to get a shot off. And to me, Luka would be great to play with. And I think if Porzingis can stay healthy, which, you know, again, I think that's a fairly big if, but if he can stay healthy, the two of them paired together just makes so much sense on so many levels that it's got to be exciting to be a Dallas fan. Despite the fact that you're missing Dirk, you've got two pretty exciting young pieces to be able to build around.
Yeah, no, for sure it is. I mean, some of my buddies, they're not as big into basketball as I am. But you know, I got to watch preseason. You know, there's 82 after that. I think they're gonna surprise some people. Like I said, if Porzingis can stay healthy, I think they are. But the problem is the West.
Right.
You know, the West with, you know, like I'm watching the Warriors and the Lakers right now as we're talking, and it's just like, goodness gracious. I mean, I don't think the Pelicans can be slept on. I think that they're going to be, you know, give some people some fits and people are going to have some struggles to try to identify how to actually handle, you know, Zion. And if he ends up making some shots, I mean, then what are you going to do? I mean, the guy is, what I was watching the other night, had 29 on 12 or 13. You got the Jazz, you got the Blazers, and you know, but to your point about passing, I mean, that's one of the things that, you know, like I talked about before, that really just makes you fall in love with the game is, you know, watching guys like Jay Kidd, you know, pass the ball in transition, throw lobs or whatever, watching Steve Nash operate or dissect a defense on a pick and roll situation or whatever. I mean, you know, guys like that, you don't see them. I don't think we just see that type of artistry, I guess, for lack of a better way to put it. You see the shooting. You got some unbelievable guys that can do some unbelievable. Like James Harden is, you know, as much as I'm not a Houston Rockets fan and hate to watch him dribble so much. I mean, watching him just the way that Utah had to guard him last year, you know, with the whole rear view in the back behind him type thing. I'm like, man, that dude is. It, from a basketball sense, is just, I mean, amazing.
Yes. You know, would you have ever, okay, so I got to ask you this. Would you have ever in your life imagined a situation where a team would actually defend a guy behind him and just let him go towards the basket? And obviously, they were trying to funnel him towards Gobert. But I remember when I watched that and you're kind of looking at it and you're looking at it and you're saying to yourself, This can't really be what they're gonna do. And yet the reality is it was actually somewhat successful, but it's just mind blowing that playing the guy behind him ended up being a more effective defense than trying to play in front of him. It's crazy to me.
Oh yeah. I mean, I wouldn't have when I saw it, you know, you could go back and we talk to the kids, you know, because we try to do a lot of film with our kids and talk to them a lot about the differences of the different levels of play.
As you've listened to the Hoopheads podcast, one common topic that continually comes up in our conversations is character. I'm fortunate to be associated with the Positive Coaching Alliance, a national nonprofit movement that provides valuable tools, training, and resources for coaches, athletes, parents, and administrators that is centered around sports and educational psychology and organizational behavior research. PCA combines this research with practical advice from a national advisory board of top pro and college athletes and coaches who utilize PCA principles at the highest levels of competition. Through a partnership with our local Cleveland chapter of the PCA, we are pleased to offer a discount code to allow you, our listeners, to take a PCA online course for just $20. To take advantage of this offer, visit the store on positivecoach.org and enter the discount code HOOPHEADS20. That's HOOPHEADS20 with two capital H's. Coaches, I hope you'll take advantage of this great offer from the Positive Coaching Alliance and help us continue to grow the game.
I think a lot of them fall in love with not just highlights, but, you know, they fall in love with the NBA because it is a lot of fun to watch. Just as from a pure, you know, show and standpoint, that if you can really just enjoy and the athleticism and the things these guys are able to do. But no, it is mind blowing because I remember talking to them about that. Like, hey, do y'all know what they were doing? Do y'all know why they were doing that? Because I think we actually had one of our players kind of do that. And we were like, why did you do that? You know, type situation. And so we went back and we explained it and, you know, talked to them about, you know, they're forcing them to go bare. Most of them understood, but it is mind blowing to think that they would do that. And like you said, they were kind of affected for a little bit, but, you know, I think those guys are too good to, those NBA players, they're just too good for that. You know, like I'm watching the Lakers right now and I'm not a huge LeBron fan, but, you know, you do respect how good the guy is. And between Anthony Davis and LeBron, I mean, how many threes is Danny Green going to get? Right. You know, how many open shots is he about to get? Or, you know, Avery Bradley might become a shooter this year because he's going to be, you know, so wide open. And it's the game, the way the game is, I think the way it's grown. And, you know, I was reading an article earlier about Carmelo Anthony and kind of his decline and how, you know, analytics has kind of driven his game out, or that's kind of the word in that, or the theme in that article. It's just, it's really crazy to think about how much it has progressed. You know, and I love it because I was a shooter back in the day. You know, when I played, I loved to shoot threes, but, you know, also we played the game the right way. It wasn't three or nothing the way it is, you know, a lot of times today. And so I think it takes a while to get kids to understand, like, hey, we don't always just have to have a three, or we don't always have to just dribble up and, you know, dribble it, you know, 14 or 15 different times. And that's why a place like, you know, we're at the Snow Valley, or when I went to Snow Valley and, you know, went back home and told them, they asked me, you know, what was my favorite thing to see or notice or whatever. And you know, it had to be one of the first things I probably said was cutthroat. You know, you a lot of moving, a lot of passing. You know, I mean, you guys got to see it. I mean, how awesome is that last day when all the parents come and they fill that Coliseum and the kids are in there, and it's kind of like basketball in its purest form. You still got some stuff off the bounce, which is great. I love it. You know, being from down here where that's what it's about, you know, is getting to the rack. But it's also refreshing to see kids, you know, pass the ball and play together and enjoy one another's success. And that's what we're trying to really, you know, drive home with our kids at school every day, is we have some really good, really athletic kids that can get out, they can run, they can jump. On average, they're probably between 6'2 and 6'7, you know, just long athletic kids. And sometimes they just don't want to get off that ball, you know, and I hate to do it, but, you know, one day you had to do the old school. Everybody had the coach that, you know, had to prove to you that the basketball could be passed faster than you could run. I think I was unfortunately the guy that did it, because, you know, back in the day, at certain times when I was a young kid, you know, I think I was around a sophomore, I really wanted to dribble that thing, you know, and I think it was because, you know, maybe I didn't trust somebody, or I said, I'm just going to do it myself. Just go take the ball and dribble it. And my coach, he finally said, all right, and, you know, it took me. I said, I'm going to try it twice. And that third time, I said, no, coach, you win. You're right. The ball definitely is faster than me. you know, and it is a really beautiful thing. A couple years ago, we had a really good team. We ended up losing a heartbreaker in the regional quarterfinals to, at that time, they were Denton Guyer High School, which is, you guys probably aren't familiar, but they were the number one team in the state. They were number three team ranked in the country. They started 6'8", who's he ended up going to Kansas. After B-line left, he went to Kansas. You know, kind of a point forward type. A bunch of D1 players. But anyways, our team was about five, really just five guards. I think our tallest was 6'7". So he was kind of a stretch four type player. And we were averaging about 18 or 19 assists a game. And it was just, I mean, it was beautiful to watch because it was, they enjoyed it when one guy made it. And if, you know, the next time down they didn't make it, you know, they were making a pass or, you know, we call them secondary assists, the hockey assists or whatever. And it's just, passing is one of the things that I really, really love about it. You know, as much as, you know, I don't want the Lakers to win, I want the Warriors to win or the Mavs to win because I'm a big Steph Curry fan. You know, you got to like the way that LeBron passes the ball, you know, and sets guys up and does things like that. So
yeah, he makes some, I mean, we got to watch it here in Cleveland for years and years and years, but some of the passes that he makes over the course of his career are just incredible. I think probably the ones that amaze me the most are either A, the passes cross court where he's manipulating and anticipating where the defense is about to rotate and what they're about to do. And just as they start to break to make their rotation, then he delivers the pass that gets guys out of position.
As you say that, he threw the ball into the stands.
But regardless of what individual turnover he may have had right now while we're podcasting, clearly he does have the ability to make passes that not many other guys do. One at his size, two, just the speed and strength that he has. And then I still think that what sets all these great passers apart is just their vision and being able to anticipate. So the cross-court passes, and then I love the passes where he drives in and he's stuck underneath the basket, and then everybody else on the team is spotted up outside the three, and then he just makes a decision of which of those four guys are open and flings it out from, you know, directly underneath the rim out to a guy who's an open shooter. And those passes, people who haven't played basketball before or who are just fans, I don't think realize or appreciate necessarily how difficult throwing passes like that is to get all the way underneath the basket and then be able to figure out, okay, who am I going to deliver the ball to back outside the three-point line that's going to have an open shot? And to process that, all that in the moment, and then be strong enough to still throw a hard pass to where it needs to go is a pretty good skill that LeBron's carrying with him.
Yeah, for sure. I think one of the things that, as far as his passing is pure, you know, strength. Like, there's not a pass that he can't make. You know, there's certain, like, I can see him making it. You know, he'll contort his body one way and you think he's going this way, and then he's able to be still in the air and skip it all the way 50 feet across the court or whatever. You know, not everybody's physically capable of making those passes because, you know, he's got huge hands. And as we're talking, you know, he hits a pocket pass to set up Anthony Davis for a dunk. I mean, the way that he's able to pass one-handed, two-handed, oh, my goodness. And he just dropped two pretty nice ones. But, you know, the way he's able to make any pass on the court physically, I think is something that, you know, goes, you know, the vision is obvious because, you know, he's a great basketball IQ and all those things. And they watch so much film, but I think just the physicalness, his physicality and his ability to do that, I think kind of sets him apart as far as how strong he is.
Yeah, for sure. All right, let's talk about how you help your kids and your role now as an assistant coach. How do you help your kids to build their basketball IQ? Because you mentioned before that, you know, you spent a lot of time just playing outside, whether it was by yourself or with your siblings or with some friends. And I think that pickup basketball really helps to develop a basketball player's IQ. But as we all know, kids don't play nearly as much pickup basketball as they did 15 or 20 years ago. And in fact, a lot of outdoor pickup basketball is almost gone. It's definitely a dying breed here in the United States. So what do you do with your kids that to help them to better improve their basketball IQ, whether that's through practice, whether that's through individual skill development. How do you go about helping kids to improve their basketball IQ?
So, you know, let me first say, you know, I was a math teacher for 10 years. And so I think that that really has helped me grow as a teacher on the court. Because, you know, the way I always say it is math is very much so like basketball. It's processes, you know. Now basketball, it's obviously, it's a snap of the fingers. It's very, very quick. And so trying to teach a young student algebra nowadays is to me unbelievably difficult because number one, they feel like they don't get it. They may be scared of it. It may be, you know, kind of intimidating to them, but they don't think they're ever going to need it. And so the reason I bring that up is being able to find a way to connect with them as far as teaching them how to do math and the process of that. I think I've been able to translate to the way that I teach processes on the court, whether it may be. So for example, today, you know, everybody back in the day had their player that they emulated their game after, right? And so, you know, like me, I tried to be like Steve Nash. I would see him do something on the court or in the game, and then I would go try to do it and copycat it. You know, and same thing with situations. I would say, okay, I saw him manipulate this pick and roll here, so let me go do that. And so we do various things, you know, as far as film goes. We try to watch some film every single day with our kids. We're blessed enough to have access to quite a bit of film, as far as our film, you know, Synergy, things like that. And so today, you know, we asked one of our juniors who, you know, he's still kind of behind as far as his IQ goes and his shot selection and how he's doing it. And so we just queued up some CJ McCollum film and just watched it and, you know, and constantly asking him questions as opposed to, no disrespect to anybody that coached me, but, you know, back in the day, when I coached, when I played, we watched film, you sat there for an hour, you pretty much got roasted, you know, and you never really learned anything. You watched what you did good, and then when you were getting roasted by your coach, you weren't just fully engaged. So we try to engage them like that, you know, in a teaching in a classroom type atmosphere. As far as we may watch something on shooting. The other day we watched some film on Marcus Smart and how he's changed his shot in the offseason. You know, Paul George on how he wanted to clean his shot up and make everything the same. We run a lot of pistol action. So we'll pull up some clips from, you know, Doc Rivers and the Clippers, you know, with their pistol action. And we try to get them to stimulate their minds as much as we possibly can. And ask them questions like that. On the court, it's a lot of, I'm not a big fan. So I do our guards. We have another guy that does our bigs, another coach. And so whenever we do guard stuff, you know, I'll make sure that they have the stuff. We don't do a lot of on-air stuff. There's a lot of physical cues as far as like I maybe bump you here, get in your way here. We'll get pads out and kind of bump them to show them like, hey, this is how it should feel. You know, really talk them through it. Always communicating with them, always talking, always putting them in situations. A lot of times I'll treat, for example, we have a little one-on-one game that we do to where they kind of toss the ball back and forth. They start at half court, you know, it's like a transition situation. They talk, one guy's backpedaling, the other guy is going forward, they toss it back and forth. And as soon as they get across half court, the offensive player can go whenever he wants. And the goal is to try to attack hips, attack feet, and get downhill like we would in a one-on-one transition situation. And so the way I would do it with a math problem is when I first introduced the math problem, I would say, look, here's your problem. You're going to use multiplication or you're going to use addition, and I want you to solve this. And I let them go, right? And so they had to show me with pencil and paper that they actually gave some effort. So the basketball to me is the same way, the way you teach it. one of the best things that I've had success with is, so I'll give him the drill. All I want you to do is get to this paint, and I want you to attack him, get him moving, and then you just play. You know, and it takes them a second. They'll look at you, and they'll kind of go, but they kind of won't. And then pretty soon they'll say, come back, can I do that? Yes. And so what I'm trying to do is when I teach them with anything, whether it be one-on-one, two-on-one, put them in some advantage, disadvantage situations, you know, where there's two defenders in the paint, we attack the paint, somebody on our back, and I'll say, throw it to them. You're going to kick it out to somebody on the three-point line, and they're going to, now there's more to it, and it's obviously would be easier, you know, to see it if you can see it on a board, but I think you can get the gist of it. You know, just putting them in situations where we want them to ask questions. We want them to, like, feel what they're doing, see what they're doing, and like I always try to tell the kids as far as their IQ goes, there's three ways. You can see it, right? You can hear it, you can do it or feel it, right? And so to me, you know, it's like handling the basketball. So we have a guard that's going to be a senior. And so trying to teach him how to have that feel to be a point guard, which to me is very, very difficult. I think it's kind of like how what you were saying about passing. It's kind of one of those things that's kind of in you that you've learned over the years. It's not something that could just be learned, you know, in a couple months.
Right, right. I agree.
And so what I tell him about the drills that they would do, that he would do in his offseason, because here in Texas, they changed the rule. This is the first summer that we've been able to work with our kids, and we get 2 hours a week. Monday through Thursday, you get 2 hours a week. That's it to be sports specific. So in our case, basketball. And so he came back in August, and I would say, he would say, Coach, how do I get my handle better? And so I would tell him, well, what's the difference between dribbling and handling? And so in my definition, you know, dribbling is I put you out there with some cone or the old school zigzag dribble, and I say, hey, between your legs, cross, behind your back, you know, Tim Hardaway, you know, AI crossover, whatever it may be, and you go out there and you can dribble. But I said the difference is when you're a point guard, you have to handle the ball. So it's just like me, a person in life, I have to handle five or six different things while I'm doing something, you know. And so like I told him, I said, when you handle the basketball, you have to handle that your girlfriend may be in the stands. You have to help handle the coach, you know, telling you a play, or you have to handle the defender. You have to organize your whole team. And I said, how do you work on your feel for that? What are you doing? Are you simulating that in practice? And so we just really try to use as many, I guess the hot juice word right now is small-sided games, which to me is backyard basketball. Somebody just put a fancy name on it. You know, it's kind of like you and I. If you and us three went out and played three kids, you know, I would say, hey, give and go, and they would have no idea what we're talking
right.
about.
Right, exactly.
Or I would say, you know, hey, you know, back door or whatever, you know, and you just do it because you know how to play basketball. So we do a lot of 2-on-2, a lot of 3-on-3, put them in different situations that, you know, not just time and score, but different situations as far as, okay, this time, we're going to have three offensive players on the perimeter. We're going to have two defensive players in the paint. And the third defensive player is going to come in from out of bounds after we swing it around the horn. So we swing it around the horn. You drive to the paint. Defense, you can do whatever you want as soon as he dribbles that first, as soon as he makes that first dribble. And the kids will kind of go slow at first, you know, but it's again, well, coach, what do I do? Well, you attack the paint. You drive to score. You know, at our school, we drive to score, which it's not just at our school. Most people, they drive to score. But then there's so many different possibilities of things that you can talk to the kids about. You know, we have a really cool system that my head coach, Brandon Bennett, uses. And he's like the defensive coordinator, and I'm like the offensive coordinator. So he calls all of our defense, and I call all of our offense. And it's pretty cool the way he got it from Sam Morrow, who she won 4 state championships in a row at Mansfield, which is here she had an unbelievable team as well. But I mean, to win four state championships at the biggest level in Texas is pretty impressive. Four in a row, that is.
Absolutely.
And so she employed that system. And so I think that really helps us as far as we kind of have a step, in my opinion. Now, I'm biased, but I think that that gives us a notch up on our opponents, because we have five, like I was telling you earlier, we have five basketball coaches that just coach basketball. We have a JV varsity athletic period, which is an hour and a half. They do 30-minute study hall. We work out for an hour. And then we have a freshman, so just freshmen. So all those reps that, you know, maybe a school right down the road that just has one athletic period, they have to use time, and you don't get as many reps for your older kids or your younger kids, whichever ones you're trying to improve, because there's so many kids, and, you know, maybe the varsity is at a level where they can progress faster and we can put more on them. Whereas like our JV, because right now, like our JV and varsity, they don't practice in the same gym. They're in the same period. They don't practice in the same gym because they need a little bit more work. You know, they're not able to compete and play as hard and as fast as the varsity is. So we go kind of a best on best situation. And I think the fact that we'll have six eyes on our kids pretty much all the time when our JV and varsity go together, and we're working on all this stuff.
Do you find yourself asking or coaching using questions maybe more than you did when you first started coaching? So in other words, rather than stepping in and you see a mistake or you see a kid that made a quote wrong decision, so maybe the ball swung to him and they should have kicked it to the corner, instead they penetrated back the direction the ball came into a double team. So do you step in there and say, hey, what did you see there? Or what decision could you have made instead, rather than coming in and saying, hey, when you caught the ball there, it should have been reversed and kicked over to the corner? Do you find yourself doing that and coaching more with questions than maybe you did in the past?
Yeah, for sure. And you know, to add to that, one thing that I do too is we try not to stop them as much. We try to let them play multiple possessions. And then because we have such a different setup to where, like, I do offense and he does defense, I do watch the offense a whole lot more than I do, and I find myself, I'll coach some defense every now and then, but it allows, you know, both of us to really focus in on one side of the ball. And another thing that, you know, I think verbiage and language and the way that you talk to the players is such a big thing. You know, I know empowering is such a word, a great word, but, you know, every summer I try to come back from, you know, whether it be Snow Valley or wherever I'm at. I was able to work the College Basketball Academy in Houston this summer as well, and that was a really cool experience, spending time with different college coaches and stuff like that, talking to them, just picking their brain. You know, if a kid makes a play, I try not to use the word wrong as much as I used to, or tell them, like, hey, this is the finite way that you need to do things. You know, when I grew up, it was, if you're on the right side, use your right hand to finish, and you're on the left hand, you know, for an example. And so I was talking to one of our kids today, actually, the one that I was telling you about, and I try to tell them there are some things that maybe we shouldn't do, you know, because I feel like they receive it a lot better, and it's not as... And it's more new school. Like I said, I was a lot more old school, for lack of a better way to put it, back in the day, to where I would just tell them, hey, this is what you're going to do, and this is how it's got to be. You know, what I found was the kids weren't progressing as much as they, or as fast as they should. Whereas if you give them a little freedom, they're very, very creative. You know, the kids are, they watch so much stuff, and they have so much access to highlights and over all these different avenues of media that, hey, what could you have done? And he say, well, would this be right? Well, could this be right? Or maybe could you do this as well? So, yeah, and I think something that I do that's a little different is just the verbiage that I put on it, and not telling them, like, okay, if you – you know, as I'm watching this game, they set a step up screen. you know. And so, you know, one of the things you could do is snake. You could attack the big, go baseline, hit the drip. You could attack the baseline and you know, kick it to, we call them the 45 or the T guy in front of the rim or the different places that we have players. So really trying to, again, challenge them mentally to know that, like, there are some things that you could do better here, you know, which it is, they're doing it not correct, but there are some things to do better, but there are also things that there's a lot of right answers. You know, like kids will say, oh, was I supposed to, you know, go right and then spin left? Well, maybe not if that's not your play. You know, maybe you could have done this better, or maybe that defender is not quick off his feet, he's not a shot blocker, so you can't elevate and challenge him. You know, just trying to get them to think of all the different things. You know, I think that's one thing the kids struggle with right now is, you know, we run a lot of ball screen stuff and they always do the same thing. They'll always come off with a couple little fake dribbles and simply pass it. And so, you know, one of the drills that I do with them is I'll get out there and I'll have a manager be, you know, maybe the manager is the drop coverage guy and I'll be the guy guarding the ball handler. And a lot of pushing, shoving, and trying to make them just really laser in and focus on, you know, the read or the decision that they're supposed to be making. You know, I read somewhere the other day, I didn't make this up, but, you know, everybody always tells kids, do things with your eyes up, do things. You know, one young coach said, you know, do it with your head up. And, you know, you continue to have to say it every day. Well, I read the other day, I can't remember where I got it, but somebody said that they simply just ask them when they see kids' eyes down, they ask them, what are we looking at? You know, and I think that's a great way to, you know, that speaks to the kind of the verbiage that I'm talking about of just trying to find that special way to, or that different way to relate or connect the information to the player, you know, and that's why I brought up the math, is because math, I didn't teach, I had hundreds and thousands of kids over 10 years and, you know, all of them were pretty much taught different, you know, and sometimes it wasn't me. Sometimes it was a peer tutoring type situation. So anything that we can do to that effect, we try to do. I think that, you know, that's one thing that I've learned from going all over the place and being around coaches from all over the world is there's so many ways, and it's really awesome when you think about it, there's so many ways to do things the right way as far as in basketball goes. You know, you got people that have their opinions and they've been very successful, and maybe that's not that may not be your opinion or my opinion or whatever. But I think that's the beauty of basketball, is you have all these different styles and all these different philosophies. And, you know, you watch it every day on TV, or like we see it every day in gyms across the, you know, the state or whatever. And heck, in our own, we get after each other and kind of go at it as coaches, like, well, this is right. I remember one day we talked about how to space a cut out after somebody nail cut, you know, how they should do it. And you go back and forth, but I think that's the beauty of basketball, is trying to find a way to connect to those kids and get them to get the proverbial light bulb to go on. You know, when you see that they get it, when you see that, you know, they know where to attack and they know when to attack and they look really fast when they do it. You know, you're like, man, that kid is really, really has a great feel for the game, or he has great IQ. And so just different ways, but I know that was the long answer, but yeah, to answer you, try to just ask as many questions as I can, and not so much me. That's kind of been my thing this year, is I want them to ask questions. So, you know, I'll do things like I won't say very much. I'll just kind of give them a blanket so that the situational game or the small-sided game or the drill is ran correctly, but I won't tell them. You know, in the past, I would be very specific and say, okay, we're going to work on middle ball screens or slot ball screens. You're going to come off two dribbles, and then you're going to do this, the X, Y, and Z. Whereas this year, and it's really helped, I've simplified and cut out a lot of, I know it kind of probably doesn't seem like it because I can talk. I'm a talker. But you know, I really try to simplify my instructions so that they kind of take, I guess, ownership would be the word of it, and kind of make it their own creative twist. But we still get what we're trying to work on, but they're able to kind of feel it out. You know, they hear me say it, they see their teammates do it, and then they're able to feel it. So they, you know, try to ask me, ask questions, try to get them to ask us questions. You know, we really want them to ask each other questions and help each other. It's cool. We have a couple kids that have, they were actually, been running some of the stuff that we run for 4 years now. And so it's cool to see them kind of put their own flair, you know, and one of them, he's really kind of that light bulb has gone on for him. And he knows when to slip, when not to slip. He knows when to pick, or he knows when to pop. He knows when to run to the rim. You know, he knows when to drive it. Kind of know, you know, and it's really cool to watch him kind of manipulate, you know, obviously much not near as good as LeBron does, but kind of manipulate the younger kids and kind of put them in position, and then he'll get a layup here, or he'll get an open shot here. And, you know, we've just challenged them as much as we possibly can. And we give them, we have terminology for everything that we do. So there's always a reference point. Like I said, I really try to, I think my math background as far as teaching math really, really helped, the way that I taught. You know, I was not near as good as a math teacher my first year. I mean, my first year, you go in there and you just like, dude, what am I doing here?
Right, what am I doing?
Yeah, and you know, by year 10, I got the book memorized. We go in there. We don't have to do, you know, I don't have to read any notes or anything. We're just, you know, we're at it. And the class, you know, ran itself. And it's kind of the goal that I think that we would all want for our players, is for them to be out there, be self-sufficient, and to where we always tell them, man, we want to be on that sideline just saying, yep, here we go, let's go, you know, and being fans. You know, now we do coach them up, you know, when they constantly see, you know, when they constantly see the same mistake over and over and over, and we'll just try to find as many different ways to relate to them as best as we can, and try to make it's funny, but you know, we had a kid that he loved to eat. That's what he did. He loved food. And his sophomore year, he was on JV, and I was in charge of the scout team. And because we have only five coaches that just do basketball, we're really fortunate in our setup. So we had three coaches. We all have basketball, and I'm pretty quick with it. You know, I contribute to them and stuff like that, which is really awesome. It gives me an outlet for all my ideas and everything. But, and our district is 1-to-1. So every kid has an iPad. So to speak on kind of the thing to how we build their IQ is I would create, my job was to create the personnel, you know, the personnel report, you know, tendencies, things like that, go-to moves, height, weight, scoring stats. And then our other two sub-varsity coaches, what they did was their job was to, they watched the film, because we have huddle and crossover and things like that we can trade with, and they would draw up a scouting packet, you know, like much like college or the NBA. And we shoot it out to their iPads through Google Classroom. And so the kids would have a chance to read the scouting report, you know, days before the game. You know, of course, we're blessed. We don't have other responsibilities. And what the reason I bring that up is to speak on their IQ. A couple of years ago when a team I was talking about, that we were really, really good. You would have thought that we were in practice with the other teams. The kids knew their system so well. They knew the kids' tendencies. You could tell them, hey, who's your matchup? He'd say, hey, number 21, John Smith. What's his go-to move? Oh, coach, he likes to, you know, jab and go right. Or if he goes left, he's going to shoot a pull-up jump shot. Oh, this kid, you know, he's only going to pump fake and drive. He's not really going to shoot it. So we need to, you know, be prepared for the drive. And I think things like that, just challenging them as much as we possibly can about the game of basketball, watching film with them daily, different things, you know, finding different things to watch with them, I think has really, really helped their growth. You know, we were talking about passing with them because they were struggling to kind of let the ball go and get out of their hands. It was sticking. And so we watched a really good college team, you know, pass and move the ball. It was Kansas. We watched them kind of play together, and it was really free flowing in their four out one in. You know, we were talking about footwork and how important it was to be able to play off of 2 feet. So we watched a ton of Villanova, and our kids have really become, you know, very good for the most part. At you can really see it translate to the court. Now, I think it's a mixture of all of it, but, you know, one of the things that I think is film is just such a great tool that we're just fortunate enough to be able to watch it every day with them.
The Head Start Basketball Holiday Camp for boys and girls in grades 1 through 6 will be held on December 26th and 27th. Join us for 2 fun days of basketball fundamentals, contests, and small-sided games. You can find more information or get registered at headstartbasketball.com.
What kind of film do you watch? Are you watching more of highlights of other, again, like, are you watching the Kansas Jayhawks? Are you watching NBA clips? Are you watching more of your own games, your own practices? Or are you watching, as you get into the season, more of your opponent's film? Which one are you spending more time with, or is it all equal? Or just explain to us a little bit about what you do in terms of not necessarily what you and the coaching staff watch, but what you ultimately pass on to the players.
Yeah, so early on when we would input, when we in the preseason, so the time leading up to August till, you know, August, September, a little bit now, we'll watch some older film of us, you know, in past years. We always bring up the team from 2 years ago because we have some kids that were on the team, and so they have a chance to still watch themselves, but they have a chance to watch the speed, and we run some of the same stuff, and so they're able to see the way that it should look. As we've gotten into more into, you know, building our, you know, our player development and things like that, we pass on, we'll watch, like I said, we'll pull up, you know, CJ McCollum and watch him, or we run a lot of ball screen stuff. And so we watched how Duke running there, because, you know, Duke runs the, I know a lot of people do, but the European ball screen continuity stuff, you know, we run a version of that. And so we pulled up some clips of Duke attacking off of ball screens, you know, and like I said, we have access to some film and synergy and things like that to where we can filter it out. So, you know, we don't really watch as much highlights. Now during the season comes, we'll watch. So on Wednesdays, the day after a game, Wednesdays and Saturdays, we play on Tuesdays and Fridays. We try to watch as much of ourselves as we possibly can. Try to challenge them that way. Let them see what they did right, you know, which is very, very important. And some things that we need to get better on, you know, whether it be effort spreading the floor in transition or defensive rotations, you know, not setting good screens, you know, the normal stuff. And then we do a really good job of getting film and trading film, with people, you know, through huddle or crossover or whatever, or we may have to go live scout. And we'll go and we'll, you know, during the season, it's so hectic. We will for sure either Mondays or Thursdays, we will watch some of our opponent. We'll get the kids together. And it's normally, we normally watch film before we go to the court so that it can, you know, translate. Now on Saturdays, we do it after, but on Saturdays, we have more of a shooting and kind of an active recovery type practice. But If we're going over our opponents, we'll watch before, you know, kind of see some of the actions that they run, kind of show them personnel. We got a lot of really, really good basketball players here in the Dallas-Fort Worth Metroplex. So if we go into a game unprepared and the kids never see who they're playing, which a lot of them know who they're playing, they know their their opponents because of social media and because we're in such a close proximity to everybody, then we would be in trouble. But we for sure watch them. You know, we tell, hey, what's he do well? Hey, what he knows here? And it's kind of the same thing. It's a classroom type setting. It's not, you know, hey, this is what they're doing. Y'all sit there for 10 minutes. It's very, we try to be as engaging and interactive as we possibly can. Now, when we get to the playoffs, you know, we're fortunate enough to do that. Then we pretty much keep the same routine, but we don't as much watch as much of ourselves. We watch a little bit more of our opponents just so we're very prepared on what they do. Now, if we need to show about 10 minutes of ourselves, then we will, you know, but I think in the postseason or in that time, we're pretty, you know, up and rolling. We're moving pretty good, and we need to be prepared for what we're about to face, unless we need to clean stuff up. But like I said, at that point, you know, we've been fortunate to have our wheels moving pretty good and being on the right track. With the other thing that we do with crossover and with film is, you know, last year we walked around and we filmed everybody's shot. And so we use Google Classroom a lot because we're a Google district, and so it's free and all the kids have iPads. So we can shoot a lot of information to them. That's how we shoot scouting reports, and that's how we shoot the, you know, any film that we need, if we need to send them something. But we'll use it as far as player development as well. I'll post their, I'll video their form to them, you know, shoot it to them and ask them about it. You know, did you watch yourself? Did you watch the shot? What did you see? What did you not see? You know, with crossover, and I don't know how it's going to work with huddle and crossover merging, but I think it's probably about the same. We'll do a bunch of, we'll make reels for the kids. I don't know how familiar you guys are with crossover, but you know, it's pretty cool. I'm big into the technology stuff. I really, really like it. I think it's a great tool to not utilize. So I'm big on that, but we'll send, you know, if a player is struggling, you know, with his shot, I'll filter out all his, you know, shots off the dribble if that's what he's struggling with, and I'll send just him that reel. So he doesn't have to, you know, and it goes straight to his phone. He can watch it, and I'll shoot him a text, or I'll tell him, hey, I sent you a reel. I need you to watch it. You know, watch yourself. Tell me what you think type thing. And, you know, we try to just do little stuff like that as much as we can, you know, and kind of copycat off the way that the best in the world, the NBA, does it, you know, as much film as they watch. And, you know, we'll filter out, we'll pull kids in the office and have individual meetings and, you know, look, hey, your defensive rotations, or they're not very good, or you're not driving the ball with the, you know, the correct speed or pace, or, you know, whatever the situation is, you know, we'll pull kids in there and have individual meetings with them and just pull up their clips and watch them, you know. And sometimes we do it as we had a kid a couple of years ago. We use it as a kind of like a confidence booster for him. You know, he wasn't shooting the ball well, so I filtered out the games that he did shoot well and made a reel for him and shot it to him on his through crossover. And, you know, I don't know if that's why he started shooting better, but, you know, we try to do anything we can as coaches to help players. I mean, I know you guys are no different. Just little things like that. And then, if we can add anything to our repertoire of stuff that we do, then we do it. But those are kind of the staples of what we do as far as film with the kids.
So two things here. One is what I hear you saying is that when you go out and you're trying to learn and improve as a coach, you're looking to take and borrow, steal, however you want to phrase it, things from other coaches, whether that be by attending a clinic, attending a camp, looking at it on the internet, studying your own film. And then the other piece of that adjustment is that you also have to tailor your coaching and instruction to each of the individual kids and get to know them. So as a coach, yeah, you beg, borrow, and steal things from other people, but then you take what information you were able to bring in and then sort of mold it into how it fits into your philosophy, both as an individual coach and your program. And then conversely, on the player side, what you do is you adjust your instruction based on how that particular player might learn the best. And some kids might need more questions. Some kids might need an actual physical demonstration. Another kid might need to, watch two other kids do it, or maybe they need to watch it on film. And so what I hear you saying is that as a staff and yourself in particular, you're always trying to learn. You're always trying to get better. And then you take the things that you're going to use to make you better and adjust them to your particular situation. Does that seem to sort of summarize what you were saying in terms of how you grow and improve as a coach? And then conversely, how you help your players to grow in the same way?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, like I have some pretty lofty goals for myself. You know, I want to know everything there is to know about the game. Which, you know, the chances of anybody ever doing that are slim to none. So the way that I'm wired is I want to do whatever I can to make myself be the best coach, teacher, of the game that I possibly can, and to help. You know, we get satisfaction and joy. I want to help as many kids as I can by using basketball to get better. And so if I can go to Waverly, Iowa to learn something, I want to know what people, especially I tell kids all the time, man, we need to go. My goal is to go and talk to people that are where I want to be, or that I think they may know something that I don't. And normally they do, and so just spending time as much as I can. And it doesn't always work, Some stuff doesn't work for us that may work for other people. We had to kind of adjust the cutthroat. We can't really square up in our league. It's very physical. If you square up and you put that ball out there in front, the ball's probably going to be, it's a big, very big athletic league that we play in, our district. And so, you have to kind of adjust those things. But I mean, the problem that I always run into is there's so much stuff that I love basketball and so much and talking basketball, that I have so many things that I'm like, man, I want to do this. I want to do this. And my head coach, he always has to tell me, hey, Zach, we can't do everything. My first year taking over, calling the offense, I remember printing out I was like, he said, can you print me out a hard copy? He's not with all the technology as I am. And, I said, yeah, no problem. So I made this playbook, I thought it was the best thing ever. And, printed it out, using Fast Draw, and he looked at it and he said, man, it's 138 pages. And it's just how my brain works. We didn't use all that, and I knew we weren't, but that's kind of the thing that I've been trying to just, like I was talking about earlier, just simplifying in all aspects, simplifying in my coverage and all that.
Yeah. All right. So let's jump backwards and talk about your entry into the coaching profession. At what point did you know while you were still playing that you wanted to be a coach? Or was that something that came to you after you were all done, where you knew you wanted to stay in the game and now you were looking for an avenue to be able to do that? Or did you always know you wanted to be a coach from a younger age? And talk a little bit about your process of how you got into the coaching profession and why.
And I wanted to be, I wanted, just like everybody else, I wanted to play in the NBA and, I played imaginary NBA defenders, yada, 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 but, out in the driveway. But I knew I can't even tell you, as long as I can remember that at one point, at one day, that I would be a coach when I got done playing. I never wanted to do anything else. Somebody asked me and I said, I have no idea. I have no idea what I would do if it wasn't for basketball. And so I just always wanted to. I wanted to be, originally I said, I want to be a college coach. But then I felt like I could do more for people, and impact more lives and be more of a mentor to people or to kids at the high school level. Maybe one day I'm really just interested to see the, you know, to use basketball as an avenue to just take me wherever it goes. You know, I love basketball. I've always wanted to be a coach. So I got done playing in 2005. And I thought about being a grad assistant, and I'm glad I didn't. It wasn't for me. You know, the college game is just not for me. I'm better suited for the high school game, or, you know, to where all I can do is coach basketball. You know, I don't think I would be a recruiter. I'm not just the best salesperson. You know, I tell my coach all the time. I told you this morning, you know, I have the best job. I get to coach basketball.
Right.
You know, he's the head guy. And so everybody gets mad. I call him a bad play. They get mad at him, you know. Somebody in practice too hard, you know, they get onto him. And so the only other avenue that I could see myself is, you know, maybe if I'm so blessed and so fortunate to at a higher level, you know, maybe super elite high school players, or, you know, lucky enough to do some player development in the NBA or something like that. But, you know, I think so many times people look forward instead of just trying to make an impact where they are. And so I went to alternative certification because, like I said, I was going to be a college coach. Well, I didn't decide that until the spring of 2005 when I was graduating. So I did no internships or whatever it's called where you student teach. I just said, you know what, I'm going to go back home to Texas. I graduated from Oakland City University in Indiana, where I played there, a little D2 school, a little speck on the map. And so I went home and got in an alternative certification, you know, program. And, you know, I tried to follow the dream of like everybody else, you know, oh, I'm going to go overseas and I'm going to do this and do that, you know, and it didn't take me long to realize, you know, it just, coaching is where I can do better. You know, I remember coaching a substitute teaching where I graduated from in Waxahachie, Texas, and coaching us, man, how old were they? They were probably 9 years old, 10 years old, little girls, YMCA team, you know, and I go in there with some complex offense that we ran in college, and they're like, you know, they're just so excited when they score a basket, and the score was 6-8. But it was, you know, it's basketball in its purest form, and it was just so much joy from that. And so I went to, signed up through a school to get my alternative certification. Well, the only school was in East Texas, a small 3A school, which is pretty small, Athens, Texas. And they hired me to be my first year was a seventh grade math teacher. A junior high basketball, football, and track coach. Because in Texas, most of the time, you have to coach more than one sport. Well, you know, I played a little high school football, and I love football, too. I mean, you can't not love it if you're from Texas. And so I was like, cool. I was just excited to be a coach. I was so excited. I was going to coach the eighth grade AA team. And so me being, you know, how I am, I went straight to the head coach of the high school and said, hey, you need any help? Let me know. And so I would go up there. I would finish our practices and I would go up there and, you know, if he needed me to jump in drills or a little small school, you know, it didn't have big numbers. And it was awesome. You know, he was great. I still talk to him today. Actually, the guy that was a JV coach, I stepped in and, you know, he had to be somewhere, couldn't coach a game. And it was just a great, great first experience. That JV coach is still, you know, one of my best friends. And so from there, I got an opportunity to move back to where I graduated from, Waxahachie High School. I was the JV coach / varsity assistant, for 4 years. And we were okay. We had 1 year that was pretty good, you know, still learning, still young at the time. Still, I guess I would say not just as bold as I am as far as speaking, you know, hey, this is how we should do stuff. You know, it was more, let's let the older guys coach. And, you know, now I would still get in there and talk to them and I would be fired up and that sort of thing. But as far as like having input on the system and what we did, I wasn't as involved maybe as, you know, I would have liked to have been, but continue to go to clinics. You know, we have a a great high school coaches, basketball coaches association here in Texas, and they have great clinics. So I always go to those, you know, seeing Brad Stevens, Jay Wright, Billy Donovan. I mean, lots of great names, great coaches come down here. So continue to learn. From there, I moved to, you know, two more schools after that. Just wasn't great fits. And I was the same way as a player. I want to be, my main concern is, can I help people grow? Right. And so I didn't feel like I was being able to really help people grow as far as students or whoever is around me. You know, like I have our coaches on staff. I'll talk to them about basketball till I'm blue in the face. And at times I'm sure they're like, man, does he ever stop talking about basketball? And I don't, you know, it's just what I love. It's my passion. And then I moved to where I'm at now. Actually the guy that I was, the JV coach that was at Athens, he called me because he was like, when I'm a head coach, you're going to come with me. You know, I guess he thinks I do a good job.
It's good to be wanted.
Yes, sir. And so I said, man, I said, and South Grand Prairie is always really, really good at this. One of the top teams in the state, you know, always really, really good. No, very well known. Our head coaches and this the program, they had built it up, I think. So he's been there 10 or 11 years. So those two had been there for about 5 years and really built it up off of hard work, you know, toughness, discipline, just playing hard. Had some really good players as well. But when I got that opportunity, I jumped at it, came over with the JV coach for 2 years. And they really just allowed me to be myself. My head coach, his name is Brandon Bennett. He's been 10 or 11 years, and he is, no doubt, the best head coach I've ever worked for. You know, he lets me be me. You know, I have a million ideas a minute. I'm always talking, and he just lets me be. And, you know, if it's too much, he'll say, hey, Zach, we can't do all that. You know, that's a little too crazy. Cause sometimes I do have some out of the box stuff that maybe I saw or read, or, you know, I'm constantly scouring, you know, whatever avenue of information that I can. To get new ideas to help the kids on and off the court. And then I was able to, this will be my third year as the varsity assistant. I always have had a pretty good, influence as far as like suggestions on offense and things like that. But once I became the varsity assistant, then it was kind of like, he's like, hey man, you like the associate head coach. You know, you're going to call all the offense. And I really didn't believe how much, because it is an unbelievable amount of trust that he has put in me, and I'm very grateful and blessed for it. I remember it was one of the very first games, my first year as the actual varsity assistant here, and it was the last second play to be drawn up, and that's how you know you're really trusted. He gave me the clipboard, and I was like, okay, baby, here we go, you know, let's rock and roll. And, you know, we've been running ever since. And I mean, we're just blessed. It would take, people ask me every summer if I'm going to try to be a head coach. And, you know, I'm kind of living my dream. I have my basketball business that I do on the side with the angle of the coach or whatever. I get to travel the country, you know, hopefully next summer I would love to be able to go overseas and work a camp somehow, or, you know, any new opportunity that I can. If it's a basketball opportunity, most likely, if I can, I'm going to say yes. And so he allows me to do all that. And also, I do my stuff on the side, and I'm able to not be bogged down with all the head coaching duties. And I'm able to write articles or, you know, whatever. I just had one published by Stat that was, you know, it took me a while to write it. But I mean, it to me, it's a dream. I get to basically talk basketball, you know, through the internet, you know, with my angle of the day thing that I do. And it's been kind of fun too. I've started incorporating some of my buddies. Today, one of my really good friends, he had his own set that he wanted, and he was pumped. And I said, man, I don't know how many people are going to look at it, but it's not about that to me. You know, yesterday I had, you know, not, you know, a few viewers or whatever, and one of them was from France. So if I help somebody from France, I mean, that's awesome. I may never know. I don't know who it is, But, you know, just being able to talk basketball and share my passion and love for helping people, coaches, players, whoever, you know, that's my dream. And I'm actually getting to do that right now. So, I mean, I'm blessed.
All right. Two questions. One, the first one, what pieces of advice would you have for someone who is an assistant coach? So you've talked about how you really enjoy being in that position. So maybe toss out one or two pieces of advice for assistant coaches. And then second, after you answer that, just go ahead and tell us a little bit more about angle of approach and what you're trying to do there, just so people have an understanding of what that particular role in your life is, what role that's playing for you in your life right now.
Well, as far as the advice for assistant coach, I would say, you know, one of my most important things would be loyal, and with that, just be trustworthy. You know, try to be the hardest worker in the room. You know, that's my two goals are always, I want to do my best to be the most knowledgeable, most prepared person in the room, and I want to be the hardest worker in the room. And so if I have a chance to do something before my head coach, so that I can be a solution maker for him, then that's awesome for me. You know, he lets me put out certain fires that he probably, you know, that save him some stress, you know, and that's a point to him. You know, he's given us so much responsibility and trust that I would say just be a star in your role. You know, it's kind of like being that sixth man on the basketball team. You know, you don't, maybe it's not the role that you want at that particular time, but just be the best you can where you are. Don't look forward. Just do the best. You know, be where your feet are. Be there. Do the best you can, you know, and by all means, please be loyal and work hard for your head coach. I think that's gotten me really far. I think, you know, I try to do the best at everything that I can as far as helping him out, and helping others out, you know, helping the guys that are around me, the younger guys that we have on staff, helping them out. So that would be probably my biggest piece of advice for young assistant coaches. And I say young, like I'm just old, but, you know, to me, I've been around the game for so long. As far as angle of approach, I want to say I started, like I referenced earlier. So I've been wanting to have a basketball, I call it a basketball services business for as long as I've been coaching, you know, and there's a lot of things that I want to do with it. And my vision for it is to one day be, you know, worldwide, to where I can, you know, touch lives through basketball on a world scope, you know, and right now, and I also don't want to forget about where I'm at. So I was actually talking to a parent tonight. I had a lesson with a seventh grader and a lesson with a fourth grader. And I want to do it, you know, do something to give back to the community where I've lived for so long, you know, to where they have a chance to use this thing like I've been able to use it, and how so many of my friends and so many of us can use it. You know, like, it's cool. I'm here right now talking to you guys from Ohio, you know, all because I simply messaged you guys, but it's because of basketball and because of Snow Valley and things like that. I would love for it one day to be able to do clinics for coaches, to help coaches. Cause what I've also found is there's a lot of coaches, and I don't know it all by any means, you know, but I love to learn, and I love to help people, whether it's young coaches just starting out that, you know, maybe they don't quite know what offense to run. Maybe they don't quite know how to relate to their players. Maybe they're in a situation to where they have, you know, a bunch of short defenders. They don't know what defense to run, or they're not very athletic or what have you. Just sharing any type of knowledge that I can with about basketball, you know, and sometimes, hopefully, eventually, you know, I wrote the letter or article about, you know, Snow Valley, just telling people how awesome Snow Valley is, you know, just sharing anything and everything I can about the game of basketball and help kids. Right now I do the angle of the day every day. I try to do it every day. Sometimes I get really, really busy and bogged down with other stuff, but you know, whether it's a cool zone set that, you know, my buddy sent me that he liked. We have a young freshman coach that here on staff that is really eager to grow his knowledge. And so what better way to help a young guy grow, whether to give him some responsibility. So he came up with a really good, little small sided game to work on, dribble drive motion situations that I posted the other day. It may be a video that I post. I just love to talk basketball. Like I said, I want to talk to whoever and whenever, and if any time I can help anybody, you know, and somebody reaches out and they want me to send them something, I'll send them something. You know, a buddy of mine, he's always asking me for stuff, and that's great. I think the more that you can help people, I think all that stuff will come back to you. And somebody helped me along the way. You know, people have helped me. My head coach now helps me all the time, you know, on and off the court, with lots of things. And so my vision for angle of approach is just to get as big as it can get. You know, I would like for it to eventually be to where we have certain things set up in communities to where we're doing basketball. I have buddies that are really good friends and they're going to come on board with me eventually, and we'll be in different communities and giving kids a place to go play basketball to where it's fun. It's, you know, working on the things. It's real life game situations. I don't talk about anybody the way that they do things. I just know how we do it, and what we believe in. You know, it's very games approach. It's very, you know, I hate to use the word fundamental, but you know, very, very, get right to it. And we really want to see the confidence and the translation of the drill going over. And I think sometimes that doesn't always happen in the training industry. I like to call it a player development rather than training. I know training is the cool word, but you know, I'd also like it to be to where in those communities, they also have to do some community service to where we're going out and doing things for people and, you know, building a whole person. Doing shooting clinics is something. I mean, the list goes on for all of the things and all of the services that I eventually want to get to. And so right now I'm just, you know, working as hard as I can to put out the best, you know, me that I can and the best character and the best product that I can to help people and let them have some fun and get some of the joy that I have. And hopefully it can help kids grow. You know, I've had kids from fourth grade to college players. And it's, to me, it's awesome, you know, cause I'll go from working with a Division I kid to working with a kid that's been playing basketball for 3 weeks because he's been working with me for 3 weeks, you know. And my one thing that I always tell the parents is I'm not concerned with the skill level. What I am concerned with is the effort. Because what I feel like is there's a huge, especially in my community where I grew up in, there's a very huge void and a huge need for players to that really need help. They don't know where, parents don't know where to get it. And they maybe go to a place that's not really going to help them, and they're not going to get the attention that they deserve, you know? And I know a lot of players only get worked with because they're already good, you know? And again, I don't want it to sound like that I'm coming across as, you know, that my way is the best way or anything like that. I think there's a lot of ways to get things done. But I know that there's a lot of kids that don't know how to dribble, pass, and shoot, you know, and they're not very good, but it's just because they've never been taught. And to see their development, you know, I have an eighth grader that I work with, and I've been working with him since May. And the look on his face when he finally was able to make a three, you know, the first day in May, all those months ago, and I finally let him step out and shoot some threes a couple weeks ago. And to see him and the look on his parents' face and the joy that they got from watching their son, you know, consistently knock down shots. You know, that's what's worked for me. You know, that's why I do. And so hopefully I can eventually get it to where I help players and coaches all over the world and make an impact on somebody's life, and then they pay it forward and start, you know, so on and start a, for lack of a better way to say it, a trend or a movement, I guess.
That's great stuff, Zach. I think that all the things you're doing, from your role as an assistant coach at the high school level to your angle of approach and just the philosophy that you just shared with us in terms of wanting to use the game to have a greater impact, is just something that I think is sorely needed in the game of basketball. And when you look at what's out there, I think those philosophies, if we can get more people who are bringing that stuff to the game is going to be much better off, which is what we're really all about. We just passed an hour and a half, so I want to give you a chance to share your contact information so that people can reach out to you after they hear our conversation. If they want to find out more about what you're doing and what you have in mind with your movement, as you called it, with Angle of Approach, go ahead and share how people can find you, how they can reach out to you, and then we'll come back and we'll wrap up the episode.
Yeah, so if you want to contact me on Twitter, it's @WeirBasketball. Just mute my messages are, I believe, open. So message me. I'm on LinkedIn. My email address is zweir, W-E-I-R, @angleofapproachbasketball.com. If anybody has any questions, or any coaches or players or parents or anybody wants to reach out, or I can do anything to help anybody, email me. My other contact info, you can find it on our website. It's www.angleofapproachbasketball.com. And like I said, if there's any way that I can help anybody and use this beautiful game to help anybody, you know, that's what I'm all about. And I look forward to hearing from you. And I really appreciate you guys letting me come on and share my story.
Zach, it's been a lot of fun talking to you tonight. I think there was a lot of great things in what you had to say that coaches out there can take and go back and apply to their coaching situation. So we really appreciate your time. And to everyone out there, we will catch you on our next episode. Thanks.
Head Start Basketball's Player Development Academy offers Cleveland area players a unique opportunity to improve their basketball skills. Regardless of a player's age, skill level, or position, training with Head Start Basketball will elevate your game to the next level. Do you want to improve your ball handling, become a better shooter, or develop into a more skilled, confident player? Our academy classes offer training that's designed to do just that. Our training sessions are innovative and will have you learning skills that are transferable to actual games. We have 4 different class skill levels for boys and girls, ages 4 and up. All Player Development Academy classes will be held at the Strongsville Recreation Center. For more information or to get registered, please visit www.headstartbasketball.com.
Thanks for listening to the Hoopheads podcast, presented by Head Start Basketball.